We're in the 8th chapter of the book of Isaiah. Now, last study in the 7th chapter, we pointed out that God appeared unto Isaiah and told him to go to Ahaz, who was the king at that time, and take with him his son, Sher-Jashub, and tell him that those two kings, the king of Syria and the king of Israel, of Pekah and Rezin, were not to be feared. They were not going to last. Just last, the brother, he called him to burn him to the fire brand. But he said within 65 years, about the lifetime of a man, Ephraim would be brought to an end. Well, it was brought to an end when the Assyrians took Samaria and the northern tribes, and later on brought in foreigners to dwell there. Well, then he told him, don't fear them. But he said, in order that you may know, you ask for a sign. God will give you a sign in the heavens above or in the earth beneath, great or small, you ask for it. But the answer said, no, I'm not tempting Jehovah, my God. Well, you aren't never tempting God when you do what he tells you to do. But Ahaz had already made up his mind that he was going to appeal unto Tiglath-Pileser for an agreement there that he would help him against these two kings. Well, then Isaiah told him that God would give you a sign. I give the house of Israel, the house of David a sign, a virgin which should conceive and bear a son, call his name Emmanuel. Then he said that God will give you the king of Assyria. I was over there in about verse 17. He's going to give you the king of Assyria. Then he goes on the rest of that chapter to point out what's going to happen to the nation of Israel, to the north, because of the king of Assyria. Right now, when he had done that, now in the 8th chapter, he now addresses the people. So from the king Ahaz, he turns to the people now here and gives two signs unto them. Now the sign to the house of David would be a virgin would conceive. The sign to Ahaz would be the king of Assyria. I would assure him that God had appeared and spoken to him. Now in the 8th chapter, the address here is to the people primarily. And Jehovah said unto me, take thee a great tablet and write upon it with the pen of a man, for may hear Shalel Hash-Baz. And I will take unto me faithful witnesses to record Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Jeberechiah. I don't know who that Zechariah is, but in all probability, this Uriah is the Urijah of the second Kings in the 16th chapter, to whom Ahaz, now Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Uriah, he's called here. Most all scholars think this is the same Urijah of 2 Kings 16. Now, when God selected these men were not friendly toward Isaiah. They were friendly toward Ahaz. Therefore, they would serve as better witnesses because of their prejudice against Isaiah and for Ahaz than they would if he had selected two friends of Isaiah. So, select these two men. Now this word Mehir Shalel Hash-Baz, he was to write this tells him here, right on a great tablet. Now he doesn't say whether it's stone, or whether it's wood, or whether it's skin, but write it and put it in a place where it can be seen. Now this word, even this expression means the spoil speeded, the prey hasted. Now Sher-Jashub meant a remnant shall return. So when he went to Ahaz with Sher-Jashub, a remnant shall return, that should have said something to him. That should have said that they're going to be carried away and the remnant will come back. But it didn't mean a thing to him. Now then, this on this tablet is Mehir Shalel Hash-Baz, the spoil hasted, the prey speedy. That is, soon, and we'll learn what that means in just a moment. All right? And I went in then unto the prophetess, and she conceived. Now I don't know that she was prophesied, but she was the wife of Isaiah the prophet. Therefore he spoke of her as a prophetess. And she conceived and bare a son. Then said Jehovah unto me, call his name Mehir Shalel Hash-Baz. And that's the longest name of any person in the Old Testament. I don't know whether he called him all of that when he hollered or not. Maybe just called him Hash. Come on, Hash. I just shorten it down to that. But now this is another sign that God's giving unto them now. For before the child shall have knowledge to cry, my father, my mother, the riches of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria shall be carried away before the king of Assyria. Right? Now, he's already told Ahaz, no, I'm not to fear these two men because that God was going to take care of it. So here now are two signs that are given unto the people. These two signs are the tablet on which he wrote Meher Shelo Hashbaz, and then the living son who was given that name. So here are these two, the name then, on the tablet, and here signifies that the spoil speedeth, the prey hasted. That is, Assyria will come soon and carry away Israel, I mean Samaria, and Damascus. The two kings whom you fear are going to be carried away. So here were two signs then given unto Ahaz. Well, one of them was a sign unto the people there, offered him to the house of David. But the sign was the king of Assyria. Now then, to the people, here is the sign, Meher Shelo Hashbaz, on this tablet, and the name of this son. So before he gets old enough to call his mother and his father, Assyria will have taken the spoil of these two kings. And that's the point there. Right? And Jehovah spake unto me yet again, say, for as much as this people have refused the waters of Shiloh, that go softly, and rejoice in Rezin and Remaliah, son of those two kings. Now therefore, behold, the Lord bringeth up upon them the waters of the river, strong and many, even the king of Assyria, and all his glory, and it shall come up over all channels, and go over all its banks, and it shall sweep onward unto Judah. It shall overflow and pass through. It shall reach even to the neck, and the stretching out of its wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel. Now here's our word Emmanuel again. Now let's look at this paragraph and what he says. Now this word, this stream, Shiloh, the water of Shiloh, seems to have been a stream that flowed out from beneath the temple. It's generally thought that that's what it was. A beautiful stream of pure water from a spring that was under that. Now the point is that you are more concerned with making a covenant with Assyria, because Nineveh were located on the great river river Tigris. And that's what he's talking about here. So you prefer the river Tigris to the waters of Shiloh. Right? Now then, God said, this river, whom you fear, will overflow the land as an overflowing flood. Now that, of course, doesn't mean literally. That river could never do that. But the people represented by the river of the Tigris, Nineveh, why, they're going to overflow the land. Now notice it says here, they'll come even unto the neck. Right? Now the head of Judah was what? It was Jerusalem. So that means then that the army of Assyria will come even unto Jerusalem, taking the land around it, but will be unable to take the city of Jerusalem. Well, that's what happened. If we come over a little bit later to the 36th to the 39th chapters, we'll see that at that particular time. But now there were two or three invasions of the Assyrians. They carried away Damascus and Samaria about 722. But they didn't besiege Jerusalem until 702, about 20 years later. And they took those two, and then later overflowed the land, coming even to the neck, but were unable to take the head. That is Jerusalem. This is the point that the prophet is making in this. All right, and it come over all its channels, and it shall sweep onward into Judah. It shall overflow and pass through. It shall reach even to the neck, and the stretching out of its wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel, thy land. O Emmanuel, God with us. All right, now, here then, as a bird of prey swoops down upon its prey, its wings extended, so like an eagle it'll sweep down, or like a flood it'll sweep over the land. So the Assyrians will come as an overflowing flood, or as a bird of prey with its wings outstretched. Now this is the point. Now what he says here, over thy land, O Emmanuel, that brings us to this thought. Now back here in verse 14 of the 7th chapter, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive, bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Now this is God's land. So God said over in Micah, the 5th chapter, and verse 2, he says there that thou Bethlehem Ephrathah, which art little among the thousands of Judah, out of thee shall one come forth, who shall be ruler, who shall be one come forth unto me, that is to be the ruler in Israel, who is going forth off from of old, from everlasting. Now that says, thou Bethlehem Ephrathah. Now that's God's land, that's God's country. Bethlehem is 6 miles south of Jerusalem. So now the point is this, that here is God's land, O Emmanuel, God with us.
And the one born of a virgin, God with us, is going to be born here because this is your land. So what's the point there? Don't fear the Assyrians. They may come even to the neck, but they'll never take Jerusalem. They'll not take Judah. No land, no nation is going to take Judah and hold it, maintain it. Now, later on, 135 years later, Babylon did take it, but only for 50 years. 50 years later, under Cyrus, God brought them back. And it was in this land that the one to be the ruler, who is going forth out of old from everlasting, that is the eternal one, would be born, who would be God with us. Well, you see how messianic all of this is, and even when he's dealing with the natural kingdom here, and what he's going to do with it, all of this has some messianic implication. I think it's the greatest messianic book of all the books of the Old Testament. All right, now let's move on. Oh, Emmanuel, make an uproar, all ye peoples. Now, I know that's plural. Have you heard the word, the plural peoples or nations? That's the heathen. And be broken in pieces and give ear, all ye of far countries. Plural. Gird yourselves and be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves and be broken in pieces. Now, that's repeated for emphasis. Now, the idea is that you peoples from afar, you will join yourselves together as one. You'll gird yourselves together as one, but you're going to be broken. Broken in pieces. Why? Because God is going to destroy you. Come to that. Chapter 13 to 23, we'll deal with that in the book. Now, he said, take counsel together, you nations, and it shall be brought to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand, for God is with us. Now, that again is Emmanuel. Emmanuel, not the name now, but rather the fact that God is with us. Now, if God is with us, then the land that belongs to God will not be taken permanently until the ruler comes who is to be born there. So you can depend on it. Isaiah and Micah are contemporary, prophesied at the same time, concerning the same situations there. All right, and so point then is here that in this, make an uproar, but and make bring your words together, encourage yourself to destroy God's people, but it won't stand. Won't stand. Why? Because God is with us. All right. For Jehovah spake thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me not to walk in the way of this people, saying, right, now notice this was a word of restraint. Don't walk in the way of this people. That is this people. Now that's sinful. Now that's his people. That's the Jews, don't you see? One of them is a nation, the other is his people, saying, say ye not a conspiracy concerning all whereof this people shall say a conspiracy. Neither fear ye their fear, nor be in dread thereof. Jehovah our host, him shall you sanctify, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. Now let's go back to a conspiracy. Now because Isaiah prophesied as he did, against Ahaz, and that the fear of Jehovah thy God, and him shalt thou serve, and shall swear by his name. Now in Matthew 4:10, when the devil said, fall down and worship me, he said, thou shalt worship Jehovah. No, wait a minute, back of that. He said it back in 4:10. Thou shalt fear Jehovah, and him only shalt thou serve. Well, that's right, that's it. Worship, he said, or fear, which means reverence or worship. So that's the passage that Jesus quoted, and that's the passage here, now that's in the mind of the prophet here, when he says here that fear Jehovah, let him be your fear. And he shall be for a sanctuary, and unto you, and you remember in Nahum 1 and 7, a beautiful passage, Jehovah is a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. Memorize that passage many years ago, beautiful passage. And Jehovah is a refuge in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. He's a stronghold. Jehovah is a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. All right, that's the same thought here. He shall be for a sanctuary. But now notice, but for a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a gin, that's a snare, trap, and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, Jehovah is going to be that. Now, that's the passage that I read last Sunday night that's quoted by Peter and by Paul. Peter quotes it in 1 Peter, the second chapter there, beginning with verse 3 there. If so be, I will not reach all of it. Just drop down here to verse 6 because it's contained in Scripture. Behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation, a chief cornerstone, elect precious. He that believeth on him shall not be put to shame. For you therefore that believe is the preciousness. But for such as disbelieve, and here's where he quotes this passage. the stone which the builders rejected, the same was made the head of the corner, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense. I pointed out, and Paul said, of course, it in Romans 9, verse 33. No, he's turned to that same thing. But I pointed out that you have two words here. Lithos, a stone, and Petra, a rock. All right, so Isaiah used two different words, just as Paul and Peter, in quoting it, used two different words. So now, here Jehovah would be a stumbling block under the people. He was a rock. Now, many times in the Old Testament, Jehovah is spoken of as a rock. He is the rock of the people, the fortress, and all that. I never quoted a number of times, counted them, but a good many times God speaks of himself as the rock of Israel, the rock of the people. Right? What does that mean? It means he's the permanent place of protection for the people. God is that. But now then, God would be a stumbling block unto them, and he was. He became a stumbling block to them because they didn't believe what he said. Now, this also looked unto the Christ, the Messiah who should come, for he was the stone laid in Zion, according to Isaiah 28 and verse 16, I lay in Zion for a foundation a stone, precious cornerstone, and sure foundation. Right? Now, so Peter quotes both passages, Isaiah 28, 16, and Isaiah 8, and this passage here that we just read in verse 14 it is. All right. Now, so that which God was in the Old Testament, Jesus becomes in the New Testament. God was the stone of stumbling and the rock of offense under them back there. Jesus Christ was a stone in Zion, the stone of stumbling and the rock of offense under the Jews in his day. So that what God was back there, Jesus becomes in the New Testament. And this looks unto him here, the Emmanuel, God with us, who would be to the Jew when he should come, what God was back yonder. All right. Now he said here, rock of stumbling here, and a gem that is a trap for you. And many shall stumble thereon. Now, five things now notice. Many shall stumble thereon, and fall, and be taken, and be snared, and be taken. That means a complete destruction. And now, there are five things that you'll notice there when he says there. And many shall stumble thereon, and fall, and be broken, and be snared, and be taken. That is, all that was going to happen would be of Jehovah, would be of God's doings. All right. Now he goes on to say, bind thou up the testimony, seal the law, that is the teaching, among my disciples, and I will wait for Jehovah. Now this is Isaiah speaking here, telling them to bind up these things now, since the Jews are rejecting what he's saying. All right, so you bind this up now, and the law among my disciples, and I will wait for Jehovah. Now that's a passage of scripture that's used so many times in Isaiah. I will wait for Jehovah. I will wait for Jehovah that hideth his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. All right, now he's hiding his face right now, but I'll look for him because people turn from him. He'll turn his face from them. Now here's an interesting statement. Behold, I and the children whom Jehovah hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel, from Jehovah of hosts, who dwelleth in Mount Zion. Now let's look at the three names. The given me shall be for a sign. Now that's quoted in Hebrews 1 and verse about 12 or 14 applied to Christ. When it said here, where it said there, that in the midst of the congregation will I sing thy praise, and again, behold, I and the children whom God has given me. Right, so as Isaiah, his children were a sign back there to the people. So Jesus Christ and the children whom God gives him, that is his disciples, will be a sign unto the people of our day, as I've preached so many times, that the church and the Bible and these things are monuments to the resurrection of Christ, to the deity of Christ. So I am, this passage quoted, that Psalm 22, the first part, and then this Isaiah part here, Isaiah 8:18 there, for signs. All right, so they're going to be signs there. Wonders in Israel from Jehovah of hosts who dwelleth in Mount Zion. Right, and when they shall say unto you, seek, he's talking to the disciples now. When they, that is these Jews, shall say unto you, my disciples, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto the wizards that chirp and that mutter. That is those idols and those things and those wizards that muttered and chirped and all that, as if the dead were speaking. Now notice further here, should not a people seek unto their God on behalf of the living? Should they seek unto the dead? Well, that's a pretty good answer. These spiritualists of today, here they're going to bring up a dead person to talk to you. Should not a person go to his God? Should not the living, should we appeal unto the dead for a revelation from God? God has always spoken through living people unto us, sent prophets and sent apostles and all that. All right, so this is a good statement here. Should we seek of these? Now notice, to the law and to the testimony. No doubt you've heard sermons preached on that, I've heard it quoted many, many times, to the law and to the testimony. All right, so instead of going to the wizards, the church, and unto these false teachers and all that, let's go to the law. The law is from God. Turn to the prophets who speak from God. Listen to these. That's good advice today, isn't it? If they speak not according to this word, that is the word of the law, surely there is no morning for them. Total night. So the same principle holds today. I brought that out in a sermon recently. I don't know when it was. Last Sunday, Sunday before that. That the idea in one there, that if we don't listen to God, what do you have? What has God said? Let's listen to Him. Well, that's what he's saying back here, same principle, and if not, that's the only way out of the darkness we're in today. Our country, our people in this country are in a terrible shape. And the church in most areas is in a bad shape. What's the remedy? What's the cure for just one thing on earth? To the law and to the testimony. Turn to Jesus Christ and His teaching, that's all. Unless we do that, there'll be no morning for us. It's one total night we're going into an eclipse. And as Isaiah said later on, I believe it's in chapter 60 and verse 2, or chapter 62 and verse 2, begin with now. He said there that darkness is upon the land and gross darkness upon the people. Gross darkness, double darkness. Heaviest darkness is upon the people. All right? It's almost that way now. There's still a little salt left. There's still a few shining lights, God's people, among whom you've seen as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life. All right? Now it goes on, to the Lord, if they speak not, surely no mourning for them. And they shall pass through it sore distressed and hungry. Pass through that mourning there, that time. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse by their king and by their God. The ultimate reading is, or curse their king and their God. I think that's the correct translation. I think that what the people would do, they would curse God because he hasn't done what they thought he ought to, and they'll curse the king. Just like people always have. Blame God for everything that goes wrong, and want to blame the government for everything that goes wrong. Well, the government's responsible for a lot of things, I admit that. But you can't blame somebody else for everything that people do. Everybody, we always want to blame somebody. Just when the President Kennedy was killed over in Dallas, everybody blamed Dallas. Dallas is to blame, but Dallas wasn't to blame. That was that with a rifle that shot him. Could have been anywhere. Same thing in Los Angeles. Los Angeles wasn't to blame for the shooting of Bob Kennedy. A young nut was allowed to get in there that shot him. And so, but they want to blame somebody, don't you see? And people today, when something goes wrong, why did God do this? Why did God? Well, God didn't do it. It's a result of our own doing. He may have, but it's because of what we did. Well, so you curse their king, they curse their God, and turn their faces upward, and they shall look into the under the earth and behold distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and into thick darkness they shall be driven away. Now they're looking to heaven, they don't see God, they look down, hence all darkness, and they're driven into darkness. All right, now that's a good chapter. That's a chapter here that says a great deal to it. God gives them two signs, what he's going to do here in this Mahal Shale of Hashbaz, and then here's what God's going to bring the Assyrian up as a river, and you make an uproar there, all you people, and God will take care of you then. And now the people are going to say, Isaiah's conspired against the king. No. God said, don't pay attention to them there. You just go right on there in that, but they're going to stumble and be broken. Now then, bind up the law and to teach him, because they're not going to hear it. But bind it up so when it comes to pass, they can know that I've spoken. All right. Now the ninth chapter, now he talked about darkness. Now notice that here's the great darkness. But now here's the dawning light now. But there shall be no gloom to her that was in anguish. In the former time he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the latter time hath he made it glorious by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. Now look at Matthew 4, 16 and 17, where that is quoted and is applied unto Jesus. Matthew 4, 16 and 17 here. All right. Now here Jesus now, leaving Nazareth, he dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea and the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali. that it might be fulfilled which was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. Now that, those are the two most northern tribes. So they would be the first ones, you see, that would be carried into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar when he came in. That it might be fulfilled here through the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun, the land of Naphtali, toward the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people that sat in darkness saw a great light. And to them that sat in the region and shadow of death, to them did light spring up. Well, that was Christ. Christ, you remember, was the light coming into the world that lighteth every man, according to John. All right, so that's what he's talking about here. That was fulfilled in Jesus when he came. The people that walked in the shadow of death, upon them the light shined. Thou hast multiplied the nation. Thou hast increased their joy. They joy before thee according to the joy in harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. These are two figures there. Here is the rejoicing in harvest, because we have a good harvest and we're dividing this harvest. Then here we, an army has conquered and they divide the spoils. Great joy among them. Right, so the people now, when this light comes, they are going to rejoice as individuals in harvest and rejoice as those that divide the spoil. Great joy, rejoice. Now why? What's the cause here? Three causes, three fours. Look at these three fours. Underscore these three fours here. Verse 4. Four, the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, thou hast broken as in the days of Midian. Now, in the days of Midian, that's when the Midianites, that's back in the book of Judges, chapter 7 and 8, if I recall correctly, that's when the Midianites held the Jews down under the iron hand for about 6 or 7 years. 7 years, I believe it was. And then you remember that instead of God using an army, he used Gideon and his 300 men with lights and trumpets. Whereas they broke the pitchers and the light shone, they blew the trumpets there, began to shout, blew the Midianites into consternation, they began to fight among themselves that night couldn't see, and fighting each other, and slew one another, and those that left, or left the land, for me, that was, but God did that. That was of God. Now, as in, he acted then, so he's going to provide this means of removing your enemy. It'll be God who does it. God will be the one who removes the enemies, the yoke from off you. There's a second four. For all the armor of the armed man in the tumult and the garments rolled in blood shall be for burning for fuel of fire. That is, it will not be done by an army. The army, the soldiers and carnal warfare among God's people will be no more. It's going to be a spiritual battle, a spiritual victory to God. These things will pass away. Other prophets tell the same thing. Now the third four, verse 6. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. Now this child born and son given is Emmanuel of 7:14 back here. This is Emmanuel of 7:14 now. Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And he shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Now this is a strong messianic prophecy. This is the Emmanuel of 7:14. Now notice what he called Wonderful. That's because of the awe and the wonder that he arouses in the hearts of people as they behold him and his conquest, spiritual conquest, and the great victory there. Wonderful. Counselor. That is, as the king who conquers, he'll be the counselor of his people. We don't need these sociologists and psychologists to go to. Jesus Christ is our counselor. We've got a problem. Take it to Christ. Go to him. Find the answer. We'll talk about that in a night or two. Draw your line. Here's my problem. Well, here's what's said. Here's what's not said. If I'm willing to take God in his word, I can solve any problem comes up. He'll be counselor. Not only that, everlasting father. Now, as a father, that means a protector and a provider of the people. Now, back in the 45th chapter of Genesis, I believe it was 45, somewhere along there, well, Joseph said that Jehovah had made him a father unto Pharaoh. Well, what did that mean? That means that God had made him the protector of Pharaoh, the one to save the land. Then over here in the 22nd chapter of Isaiah, here he speaks here of two men here. Now, Isaiah 22 and verse 22, 1 and 2, now 20, 21. And I will clothe him, that is Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, him with thy robe, that is Shebna's robe, and strengthen him with thy girdle, and I will commit thy government into his hand. And he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. And the key of David, of the house of David, will I lay upon his shoulder, and he shall open, and none shall shut. Open, none shall open. Now, Jesus didn't quote that but he said that. He said that he had the key of David. I open and none shall shut. I shut and none shall open. It's not a direct quotation, but a statement from him in Revelation 3 and verse 7. We claim the same thing for himself. All right? Now, so an everlasting father is a one who's going forth off of a bowl from everlasting that has always been the provider for and protector of God's people. That was Christ with the people back in the Old Testament days. Well, all right. And of the increase of the and everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So you got five things. Wonderful. Counselor. Mighty God. I've omitted that one. Mighty God. God called himself Mighty God later on. So he likewise is Mighty God. Everlasting. Everlasting Father. Prince of Peace. Now of the increase of his government and of peace, there should be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from henceforth even forever. The zeal of Jehovah, our host, will perform this. Now then, notice now he's going to be on the throne of David. Well, that's claimed for him in the New Testament throughout. So here's a strong messianic prophecy, promise. And as a child is born, a son is born, a child is born, a son is given. And the government should be on his shoulders. Here's his place of rule, here's his name, here's his throne, he's on the throne of David, here's his kingdom, and here's his message, a message of peace. All of that's fulfilled in the New Testament. Great prophecy, great prophecy. All right? Now the Lord sent a word into Jacob, and it alighted upon Israel. Now that would be Ephraim here, and all the people shall know, even Ephraim, and the inhabitants of Samaria, they say in pride and in stoutness of heart, the bricks are fallen, but we were built with hewn stone. The sycamores are cut down, but we will put cedars in their place. Now that was the boast of the people of Israel, of Ephraim, that Samaria to the north, that though our houses have been torn, we're going to build great ones. We're going to build fine ones. We're going to build not of just dry brick, but of hewn stone. And instead of sycamore trees, we're going to have cedars all over it. So it's a boast, and I have a boast. Therefore, Jehovah will set up on high against him the adversaries of Rezin, and will stir up the enemies, that is, the Syrians, before and the Philistines behind, and they shall devour Israel with open mouth. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. Now, God's going to raise up the enemies, and I think will be Assyria. The enemies of Assyria and Philistia, who had destroyed them, he's going to raise these up to destroy Ephraim. All right, now notice, they may not be done. The hand is stretched out still. Not through yet. You got four of those here, and I want to cover them if I can briefly. All right? And yet the people have not turned unto him that smote them. Neither have they sought Jehovah of hosts. Therefore Jehovah will cut off from Israel head and tail, palm branch and rush. Now one of those figures is from the animal kingdom, the other from the vegetable, that is the head and the tail, and the other here, the palm branch that waves in on a beautiful palm tree, and the rush here that grows down here in the mire. You're going to cut off all of these, the head and the tail, the palm branch up there, and the rush in the mire there. The elder, now here they are, rush in one day. The elder and the honorable man, he is the head. But the prophet that teaches lies, he is the tail. So God's going to cut them off from the head men to the false prophet. Now, the word false prophet never occurs in the Old Testament. That's a New Testament word. But the idea is pointed out over and over. But the word is not used. For they that lead this people and cause them to err, that would be the elders and the false prophets. And they that are led, of them are destroyed. That's what Jesus said, let the blind lead the blind, and they both fall into the ditch. That's what God's saying back there. And so if you follow him, you're responsible. Therefore the Lord will not rejoice over their young men, neither will he have compassion on their fatherless and widows, for every one is profane. I know three things. Every one is profane, that is unholy, unhallowed, and an evil doer, second. And third, every mouth speaketh folly. Got three things of the people there. That is, they're profane, they're evil doers, and every mouth speaketh folly. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. Now, next. For wickedness burneth as the fire, it devoureth the briars and thorns. Yea, it kindleth in the thickets of the forest, and they roll upward as in a column of smoke. Through the wrath of Jehovah of hosts is the land burnt up, and the people are as the fuel of fire. No man spareth his brother, and no one shall snatch on the right hand and be hungry. and one shall. And one shall snatch on the right hand and be hungry, and he shall eat on the left hand, and they shall not be satisfied. They shall eat every man the flesh of his own arm. In other words, what you say? The condition of these people is self-destructive. Now, if you saw that thing on television last night about the dope traffic in this country and how it's taken America and the youth and all that, if you saw that, then you saw an expression of this very principle here. What the Jews were doing, their wickedness was self-destruct. It was self, they would destroy themselves. That's what America is doing. America is destroying itself from within. I know besides that, and they eat their own flesh. They said that they shall eat every man the flesh of his own arm. Self-destructive. Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, they together shall be against Judah in that civil war. I don't know, civil war may break out here one of these days. I don't know what happened here. It's a sad-looking situation to me. But anyhow, whatever may come, why, God's still in control. They together shall be against Judah for all this. His anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. Now, I want to get these next four verses. All right, now that's another one of those things he's against them there. Now, here's the last one. Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, and to the writers that write perverseness. Now, these are your lawyers and your judges. Your unrighteous judges, your unrighteous lawyers. And I think that describes of this country, the judges and the lawyers. It's how much money and influence you've got. Not a question of whether it's right or wrong. And to enforce the thing is right or wrong, they don't do that. Can a nation stand like that? No. No, it can't stand like that. To turn aside the needy from justice and to rob the poor of my people of their right. Their widows may be their spoil, and that they may make fatherless their prey. Now these judges and lawyers, instead of the poor having a prey, having a right to the courts, why, they didn't give them that rights and privileges, but rather turned around and robbed them of what they had. Took that away from them. This was the spirit of that time. And what will you do? Now, you got three questions here. What will you do in the day of visitation? Now, this visitation may be good, it may be bad. Here's bad. And in the, because of desolation. And in the desolation, which will come from far. That's first. Second, to whom will you flee for help? Third, and where will you leave your glory? All of this that you thought was so great, who are you going to leave it to? Now, the final thought here, there's no repentance. Now notice, they shall only bow down under the prisoners and shall fall under the slain. That's got no repentance, don't you see? For all this is anger, is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. So this last part here, from chapter verse 8 there, when you begin there, there's the stoutness of Ephraim, the northern part, what God's going to do to them. And then the people here, in verse 3 here, why, they have not listened to God, and God's going to cut them off here. When he cuts them off, and then the head and the tail, top and the bottom there, and all that. And then next here, the wicked burns like fire, and their judges and lawyers judge and defend only why they can make money out of it. A little girl was killed over at Tucson two years ago. That guy is still no trial. I don't think he'll ever bring him to trial. But wait till all the witnesses are dead, and you can't prove anything, you turn him loose. Don't make justice on that? Why, none, whatever. Fellow ought to been, if he's guilty, ought to be in the electric chair by now. If he isn't, he ought to been turned loose. I keep dragging him. That's the way I've been operating. I would hate to have to go to our courts today. I used to think it was the greatest system in the world. I'd hate to go before one of our courts today and expect justice on anything. I wouldn't expect it when I went in now. I wouldn't expect to get it. Maybe I would. I doubt it. Well, all right. That's a good place to stop. And so, those chapters are full.